This is a Dreamcast disc and is for use only on a Dreamcast unit. Playing this disc on a hi-fi or other audio equipment can cause serious damage to its speakers.
Dreamcast, up to 6 billion players.
Welcome back to the stage of history.
Why don't we play together?
Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go!
Please stop this disc now.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to episode 39 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. 39 episodes. Can you believe it? My name is Tom. I'm joined by an international cast. I've got here with me, I've got Aaron. Hello, Aaron.
Right.
I've got Caleb from... Caleb, you've moved. Are you still in upstate New York?
I am not.
Where are you now, then?
I'm now in beautiful Manchester. New
Excellent.
Hampshire.
not Manchester, Lancashire then.
No.
Slightly different place.
A gentleman looked upon the industry that was a potential in Manchester and said, I shall make a town that will rival Manchester, England. And thus the town was named Manchester.
Do you know people from Manchester?
Manchester 2.
People from Manchester are called Mancunians. Are they called Mancunians in New Hampshire?
No.
Okay. You might want to...
Already inferior.
No, Tom. Okay. In New Hampshire, they're called Americans.
Oh, okay. Superior in every way. we've also got the man of the moment, Ross O'Reilly, joining us all the way from Japan. How is it going, Ross?
Hey, guys. Not too bad.
Fantastic. Yes, you guys listening will be no doubt aware that we've not had a podcast for around about a month. And that's because we've all had things on. We've all been busy. I've moved again, just like Caleb has. I think I've moved 4 times now since we've been doing this podcast. I think that must be a record in podcasting kind of like folklore around the world. I'm trying to think of anyone else who's moved as much as I have, just in general that I know. However, we're back now. And hopefully we will continue to entertain and educate the Dreamcast community. Let's begin as we always begin. Talk about what we've picked up, what we've played, Dreamcast or otherwise. Going to come to you first, Caleb. What have you been doing in your absence?
Well, I have been mainly playing, put the Dreamcast games in a box and find a way to transport them across 3 states, which is it's a fun game. I didn't get the high score, but yeah, no, I did.
Pretty underrated, that one.
Yeah, I ended up. I don't think I broke anything, which was good. And I ended up not getting rid of anything.
Oh, because you were about selling stuff, weren't you, to move, to make it a bit easier to move.
Oh, yeah, and I sold a lot of stuff. I gave up a lot of stuff. Not really that much, you know. But it ended up, at the end of the day, I don't think I gave up any of my Dreamcast stuff at all. I pretty much was able to condense it down to a couple boxes, and then just an open box with a bunch of random stuff in it, including the Panther controller and my Dreamcast wheel controller, which had sat in the bottom of a cabinet for a while. So I don't know about that wheel controller because that thing's pretty beat up. I might have to set it up and see if it still works because that thing is kind of taking up room, and I don't know if I'm really ever going to get out the old Dreamcast wheel controller again anytime soon.
You know, I'm in the same position because, as I say, I've moved myself recently, and we've actually unpacked everything in the house apart from all the stuff in the little games room that I've got. And so I'm actually surrounded by boxes. I've got the computer set up, but right in front of me is the poster of the barber, and he's just kind of staring at me.
Yeah.
Like leaning against the...
You found me at last.
Also, have you been playing anything current gen or on your PC, Caleb?
To be honest, no. I have played no video games for the entirety of... I've been dealing with a new job, and I've literally played absolutely nothing.
No problem at all.
I've been using Roll20 to play some Dungeons and Dragons with some people over the internet, so that's pretty funny. Roll20, of course, great system. They just lost their SoundCloud support, which stinks. Basically, that means during Roll20 games, they could play any music that was on SoundCloud at one point, but they just lost their agreement with them, so we can no longer do that, which is a real shame.
What is Roll20?
Roll20 is basically an it's a digital board game thing. So you can pretty much set up any kind of game. Most people use it for stuff like Dungeons and Dragons or role-playing games where you can have like everybody's picture on the bottom. And and then everybody has audio and video of the other people playing. And then there's a virtual kind of board game board on the main screen where you have all the little tokens and everything like that.
So it's kind of like Twitch, but for board games.
There's different ways. I think, you know, everything's virtual except for the players' little camera things. So, yeah, it's really interesting, and it's a shame that it's sort of used to have all this support, and now it's suddenly being backed off a little bit. So I don't know why exactly that happened, but I think SoundCloud thinks people are... If they think people are pirating music, that's dumb, because I think more people were actually uploading music and whatnot than stealing, you know, copyrighted music. So
yeah. That's interesting. I've never heard of Roll20, so you learn something every day. I'm sure there'll be people listening to this who've never heard of it either, so check it out, Roll20. Excellent. All right, Caleb, thank you very much for that. Aaron, what have you been doing recently?
Dreamcast-wise, I've been mainly playing Hanagumi Taisen Columns 2, which I think is probably the best Columns game I've ever played. It's got loads of different modes in it. Really fun.
What is this game? I'm not familiar with this one.
It's a Columns game based on the Sakura Wars series.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's got like a versus. You go against the computer, and it's kind of like Puyo Puyo, where you're sort of like throwing attacks at each other and all that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's got like a big long challenge mode, and there's all these different things. And what's quite funny about the main mode is it's sort of like a play, and you're basically fighting to get the top role in the play in like this theatre show. And when you beat the first person, they become like a mailbox, and it's just their head sticking out of a mailbox.
A bit random.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Cool. Have you played anything else on the Dreamcast or other systems?
That's all on Dreamcast. I've been playing a few games on the Saturn recently, been in a bit of a Saturn mood, including this really terrible Parappa the Rapper clone called Jung Riven, which is just barely playable. You don't even need any rhythm to play it. It's just kind of random. It just boos you even if you get it perfect. And sometimes you'll mess up and it'll say you got it right. So,
I love the fact you've been playing these games that I've never, ever heard of. And it's just like, what? Every time I speak to you, it's like an educational an educational experience. What's that one called? The one you were saying? The
Parappa? Jung Riven? Jung Riven. Oh, yeah, right. I wouldn't recommend it. It's terrible. Even the music's bad. Like, it's like... Yeah, it's pretty bad. I've just been sort of like raging at it for some reason. I should just put it down.
Anything else?
I've been playing quite a few things on my 3DS. I've been playing the 3D version of Streets of Rage 2, which is really nice. It's got a mode in it where you can defeat every enemy with just one hit. So if you put it on Mania mode, it's really hard to hit the enemies, but once you do, they're just dead, including the bosses. So you can just hit the boss in one hit and they're gone.
Yeah, they are really cool, those 3D Sega classics on the 3DS. The only one I've played, the only one I've played extensively is Outrun, I think.
Oh, Outrun's fantastic on
Brilliant. There. Yeah, really, really good.
Only other game I've been playing loads of because I was travelling last week to Nottingham and back was Buster Move DS. That's really fun.
Okay, yeah. What were you doing in Nottingham? What were you doing in Nottingham, if you don't mind me asking?
We went to the video game, what's it called? The National Video Game Museum.
Oh, is that where you met the cat from?
I think I saw some of your pictures.
Yeah, the cat from Red Dwarf.
Oh, no, that was in London.
Oh, right.
No, that was after.
Jesus Christ, you've been all over the place.
Yeah, we came back from Nottingham and went to London in the same day.
Wow. That's quite a journey. Nice one. Cool. I've not been to the National Video Game Arcade yet. I keep meaning to go. Next time I'm up that way, I will check it out. I've heard it's pretty good.
Yeah, it was. I'm going to be working on a video of it in the next few weeks, so hopefully that'll be up in a few weeks.
Cool. Nice one. Okay, Ross, what have you been doing? apart from causing shitstorms on Facebook.
causing shitstorms on Facebook. Been playing, as you know, I got the Vive fairly recently, so playing a bit of that. Game called Island 351. It's my latest purchase. It's like, best way to describe it, like a Jurassic Park in VR.
Mm.
You're wandering around an open environment and various dinosaurs are attacking you and stuff. You got to collect weapons, upgrade them. It's pretty good, but it's still on early access, so there's only one stage. There's not much content there yet, to be honest, but like a lot of Vive games, for the first hour or two that you play it, it's really, really tense. Really tense. Until you then learn the patterns of the enemies and you get used to it, and yeah, it loses a bit of tension, but still a great game, and I'm looking forward to seeing where they go with it as it moves on towards completion.
Yeah, I've played a bit of the Vive quite recently because a couple of guys at work, they brought their Vives into the office, so we set up two HTC Vives, and just mind blown, absolutely mind blown how good the effect.
What games were you playing?
I played a game which is like table tennis. I played that.
Okay.
And I played a game which is like Portal, you know, the game Portal. But it's like 3D and you can like pick things up. I think it's just like a tech demo. You can like pick...
Oh, it's not actually Portal, because there is a game called Portal VR Stories.
It might be that one. I'm not entirely sure. I kind of just took it off somebody else, put it on, and had a bit of a play around. I was just kind of walking around in like a...
Well, this one's got like the voice of GLaDOS. Now, it is made by Steam, an official game. Yeah. So
It must be that one.
It's quite good. It's quite short. It's only maybe an hour or two long. It's just really a tech demo, but it's good. It's definitely good fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I played the HTC Vive in Nottingham as well in that museum.
Yeah, nice.
What game did you play, Aaron?
It was some kind of tech demo where you're a wizard and you just like do spells all over the place. Yeah. It was really fun, though, because it was like the first time I've used one. I was just amazed by the motion controls in particular and the fact that you could just sort of like dip your head in the bowl of like spells and you could just mess around with everything and the physics. It was fun.
I think it's the fact
I was only on it for like 8 minutes, but
I think it's the fact you can actually like walk around as well that makes it so kind of immersive. Do you know what I mean?
Huge area for it in the museum. You know, they had the big sensor things up and they had a whole area that you could walk around, so it was really nice.
Yeah, it's definitely... When I say it, it's the future of gaming, I think it is, but I don't think it'll ever replace regular inverted commas flat games, but it'll run alongside, much like TV shows and movies or podcasts and music or...
Yeah.
Magazines and books, they'll run alongside each other as two popular mediums in the future, I believe.
I reckon they'll even start making movies like in VR as well. Oh,
they already are.
Yeah.
There was recently a deal. Who was it? I think it's Netflix that have got two VR series or movies coming soon. Yeah, so that's already happening.
Of course, there's porn VR as well, isn't there? So,
games as well, apparently, so I've been told.
Yeah.
The end of human civilization.
Yes.
Yeah, just give me a bucket to shit in and I never leave my room. Yeah.
I mean, like... as a librarian, you know, I got to bring up the sort of, you know, similar example of the whole e-books thing where everybody thought that e-books were going to be just completely replacing regular books. And now there's been a bunch of studies done where people are picking up regular books again, and they're still using ebooks, but it certainly hasn't replaced the need for regular books. So I think it's going to be a similar...
Oh, definitely.
It's going to be a similar thing to that, even though if, you know, everybody starts having, you know, everybody has ebook readers, but they still read regular.
Yeah, I mean, can you imagine in the future?
Most definitely, I agree.
Can you imagine in the future it's going to be that, you know, the mainstream play games in VR, but the hipsters play them on TVs?
On CRT, CRT TVs. Well, I think if you're playing as a protagonist of a lot of character and story, like something like Nathan Drake, that's never going to work in VR. But if it's a game where it's trying to immerse you and you're the main character, then that's where VR games can work better. Yeah. But we'll see. I think it's still too early. I think, I mean, they're too expensive. The resolution isn't quite high enough yet on the screens.
Yeah.
They're not wireless. the vibe's a little impractical. You've got to drill base stations to the side of your rooms. There's not a large enough user base yet that big developers can really invest a lot of time and money into making games. But in the next, it might take 5 years, it might take 15, 20 years. But once they do that, I think it'll become very popular.
Yeah, I reckon definitely about 5 years, I think. Maybe, yeah, slightly more. I don't know. Depends how fast get on with it.
Yeah, we'll see. Have you been playing anything else, Ross, like on conventional hardware?
Played a bit of Propeller. I've been playing on Dreamcast, a bit of Propeller Arena I played because with the recent competition. Reminded me of that. I also played a bit of Gunlord. And that just... I was just playing my Japanese Master System the other day. I bought an adapter that you can fit in the back that allows you to play PAL and US games because the carts are a different shape. And maybe you guys know about that. I'm not sure, but there's in the Japanese Master System and Mark III, if you have the add-on, there's something called an FM sound add-on, or it's built into the actual Japanese version of Master System. If you have this version of Master System and you plug in a game... that was programmed with the option for both regular sound and FM sound, then it unlocks the FM sound. And it, even though it was never ever released in the West, there are a number of Western exclusive games that actually have the extra FM soundtrack programmed in on them.
Yeah,
Sonic the Hedgehog isn't one of them, but that's what I was playing.
So what does this do? What does the FM sound thing do? Does it just enhance the sound effects?
It's just a better sound chip. So. Yeah, they can, or better quality. I'm no expert, but it's just a different. It's very different sounding, and that's why some people prefer the original because they're nostalgic for, Japanese, but people in the West are nostalgic for how OutRun sounded when they played it as a kid. But then
everything on the Master System sounded really cute to me. It all got a very similar, like chirpy sound to it.
Yeah, it is. I like both. I've not really. Got a preference, but I've never experienced the FM sound till recently, so right now I'm quite happy to just play the games, the ones that support FM sound, play them FM sound here, have a little slightly new experience I've never had before. But if you're interested, just type in on Google, like Master System FM sound comparison, and it'll...
Was Fantasy Star one of the games that used that?
I'm not sure, I don't think so, but it might be, but I don't think
it might have been.
It could have been.
That sounds.
I really can't remember, to be honest. There are quite a few.
Sounds quite interesting. I might look into that, to be honest, because I like like little obscure things that you probably just kind of never really know about until somebody mentions it offhand like that. I'd never heard of it before.
Yeah, so. The easiest way for you, because you can get an FM sound mod, which is pretty expensive for your Master System, or you can buy a Japanese Master System, which is really expensive, or a Japanese FM sound add-on, which is also really expensive. Probably the easiest way for anyone out there who's interested to do it is to buy one of the what do they call them? They fit into the Mega Power Base. What's it called? It fits into the Mega Drive you're playing Master System games.
I mean, yeah.
Oh,
so
lovely.
There's a company. I've already got an original Master System. I can't remember the name of it to me, but there's a company that's made their own Power Base cartridges that let you play Japanese and or even maybe regular Master System games on them, and they've put inside the FM chip or a copy of the FM chip that unlocks the FM sound.
That's
so
really
that's probably the easiest way to go.
Nice.
Or emulation.
Yeah.
What have you been playing anything on any like current gen systems recently?
Other than Vive, no.
Cool. That's a good mix. It's quite an eclectic mix so far this week. For myself, pickup-wise, I've only picked up the one game for the Dreamcast, and that is, it's called Mr. Yukawa's Treasure Hunt, or former managing director's Yukawa's Treasure Hunt, which was like it was a freebie game, I think, was it? Like a promotional game given away by Sega, so you had to like dig around, pick up these like little images of like items, like promotional items, and you could win them in a competition back in 99.
Yeah, I think it had a real cash prize. I can't remember. I did some research a while ago, but it had an actual cash prize for like the person who first found something or other.
Really?
And it was quite a big prize from what I remember. Like, I can't remember. I'd need to check that again.
I know that you could you could win like keyboards and backpacks and stuff like that, you know, with the online component if you found them in the game where you walk around the island and dig things up. But it's just a really weird way to do a promotion, you know, giving a game away where you could win stuff. Sorry, Aaron, you were going to say.
Isn't that the game you've got, like, the big cardboard display thing on?
Yes, it is, yeah. It was actually...
You only just got the game?
Yeah, the way I got that advertising stand-up thing was a guy who runs a website called Every Bit Gaming. He messaged me on Twitter saying, oh, I found this really random piece of Dreamcast, like, promotional stuff. Do you want it? I was like, yeah. So when I went to the Doncaster Retro Collect video game market a few months ago, he kind of kept it to one side and gave it to me when I got there. So, and I didn't have the game.
That's cool.
And it was only when I saw the game was about $8.99 on eBay. So I thought, I'll get it just to kind of go with the promotional thing. So now I've got the set. I'll probably do an article on it in the near future, just like having a look at it from a noob's point of view, if you will.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Apart from that, there's a game I've been playing called Zia and the Goddesses of Magic. We're going to talk about that in a second, so I won't go on too much about that now. Other than that, on the Dreamcast, not a great deal because, like Caleb, as I said earlier, I've been moving. Oh, one game I did play, though, was... sorry about this, but I actually downloaded it and burned it onto a CDR just to try and test if it worked. And that was Yu Suzuki Gameworks, you know, the one with like Outrun and Power Drift and all that on it. And it's brilliant. Really, really cool. I mean, like I said, not condoning piracy, but sometimes when needs must and you can't afford to spend £120 on a copy of a game, you know.
Yeah,
you
like, like that one. I have the one version of the. So basically, I kind of know what you're talking about, Tom. But basically, is it a compilation of just older games?
Yeah, it's, as I say, it's Yu Suzuki Gameworks. It came in originally with a book, like a little kind of collectible. Book of images of like Yu Suzuki's games, basically, and then on the disc came complete versions or ports of, you know, Outrun, Power Drift, Hang On, Afterburner, etc. So it is basically like a compilation of retro games.
Yeah, I love those things for the Sega Saturn. Mm. I actually have a couple of those, but my favorite one is the Ghosts and Goblins one. Mm. Where it has all the different versions of the games. That one, for some reason, is just so good. I don't know if it's probably just because I love the Saturn controller and whatnot. So,
yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
best controller.
Apart from that, on the Dreamcast, not a great deal. And current gen stuff, I've been playing The Witcher 3 because Rob donated a copy. He ended up somehow with two copies of The Witcher 3.
That reminds me, Tom. Sorry to interrupt. Have you met the what's it called again?
The botchling.
What's it called? I want to say Felch. Botchling. I want to say Felch.
Yes,
I think that's something different.
yes, I've met
the botchling.
I've met the botchling. I've done the Bloody Baron story arc, and it was fantastic. That could have been a game on its own. That. Yes, I've met the botchling now, and it was interesting, shall we say.
Now, did you play either of the first or second games?
I did. I played the second one.
Yeah, I keep on thinking I should really play the second one before I buy The Witcher 3. Hmm.
To be honest, I don't think they're not really connected. I mean, there's obviously a story run through the whole series, but I don't think you need to have played the first or the second game to appreciate the third. The third could literally be a standalone game. You know, it's a phenomenal achievement that what they've done. I mean, I'm playing it on the PS4. I don't know. It's obviously going to be better on or look better on the PC or a really tricked out PC. But you know, for someone like me who just wants to like sit down and play a game on the PS4, it looks beautiful. It plays really well. The story is amazing.
Yeah,
yeah. Easily.
I was playing it on my Dreamcast too.
Are we?
Yeah.
Speaking of
Dreamcast, we don't have time to talk about that. Let's go to our next thing.
One other game I've been playing on the, funnily enough, on the Xbox 360, I've been playing, you know, Doom, the original Doom, which is part of the BFG edition, for some reason. Just started playing that and then carried on. And, yeah,
why not?
Yeah, it's a great part of the original Doom on the 360. Anyway, that brings us nicely to the end of our first section, where we talk about what we've played, picked up, etc. Now we're going to move on to our first topic of discussion after this short interlude. Welcome back. You are listening to episode 39 of the Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. The first thing we're going to talk about properly is a new game that's hit the Dreamcast. It hit the Dreamcast earlier in September 2016. The game is from French developer Orion, and it is called Zia and the Goddesses of Magic. Has anyone else here played this game other than me? The deafening silence. The deafening silence tells me no. Okay, so I'll just talk about this game, you know, very briefly. For those people who don't know, Zia and the Goddesses of Magic is a top-down, traditional, retro-inspired role-playing game, and kind of brought back memories of things like, you know, A Link to the Past, other temporary games of the time. It's quite an original little game because most kind of post-mortem Dreamcast games, if you will, have been like puzzle games or shmups. So to have a full-blown RPG is quite cool. I know we had Leona's Tricky Adventures recently, but that was more of a puzzle game than an RPG. This is pure old-school RPG. You walk around, you go to different villages, you speak to NPCs, you get new powers.
And, well, I thought it wasn't really old-school because you had to do kind of like a DDR thing in some spots.
I was just about to come to that, yeah. So basically, when you meet an enemy, they're not random encounters. You do see these enemies walking around the map, so to actually engage them in combat, you have to like walk into them or they have to walk into you. And then it kind of changes to this like side-on view where you have an energy bar and a stamina bar and a magic bar. And then basically, in order to attack or defend yourself, you have to tap out different combinations of buttons on the face buttons on the joypad. So it might be like XAAA or something like that, and then you'll do a particular move. The thing is that they don't automatically map to the buttons, so you have to kind of remember them or write them down in a notepad, which is what I did. And when the name of the game comes from these goddesses of magic who have all been imprisoned in various, like, you know, magical prisons around the world. You have to find them. When you rescue them, they give you a new power, like a new spell book. So you, in order to learn the spell, you have to obviously read it in the menu. And then what you do is you write it down in a little book. And then, yeah, when you meet another enemy, you can use it on them and kick their ass, as it were. Yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's quite good fun. I'm not entirely sure about the €40 price tag. I don't know if it's a little bit too high, especially when the game is only...
Does that include postage?
I believe so, yeah. The game is only £4.99, I think, on Steam for the PC. So it's a little bit, you know, there's a bit of a difference in price. What I will say, though, is the Dreamcast disc or the Dreamcast version, the physical version, comes on a double-use CD. So you can put it in your PC or you can put it in your Dreamcast.
Cool.
Yeah, because I think he did that. I think Orion did that with his other. I think Mike was saying that he did that with his other games as well. You know, the Ilanzar and Philia, and the puzzle collection. I think it's Orion's puzzle collection. It's got like Yopaz Ice Star and all that kind of stuff on it. So that's really really good. It doesn't work on Mac though. I've tried that. You know, it doesn't work on a Mac. But you know, when you've got like 12 Dreamcasts in your house, it's not really a problem. So yeah.
Yeah, I really definitely really respect the guy for using his own spare time, developing this game on his own, in his own time, his own money, and then waiting till it's released to take money just like a regular purchase. Personally, I wouldn't buy it myself because I'm not sure why such a game exists. Like, if I can pay $5 for it on Steam, I've got no burning desire to play an indie game that's basically inspired by SNES RPGs and looks like a low-tier SNES RPG on my Dreamcast. And there are no games for Dreamcast. Those type of games didn't really make the Dreamcast. I don't really understand what the appeal of spending 8 times more on a game like that to play on your Dreamcast is. So if I was going to play it, I'd just play it on Steam. But
would you say the same about Pier Solar as well? Or
Pier Solar,
because that was essentially a Mega Drive pull.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it is on everything else. You know, you can get it on PSN, Steam, Xbox.
Yeah, I'd probably say the same now in hindsight. Yeah, I don't. I mean, if you look at Pier Solar now, whenever you hear it mentioned on a group, on Facebook or in forums, I never hear anyone actually talk about the game itself. It's always a photo with
Ooh, look at my limited
edition. Oh yeah, the big box.
Solar.
Box
one, yeah, so I've got the Mega Drive version, the Dreamcast version, the limited edition version. Okay, how's the game?
And now if everybody wants to take a quick look at the link that I posted from Video Game Price Charting for the price of Pure Solar, that's the wrong version, but you know, that's the general idea. They're not really. A lot of people aren't buying a game. They're basically buying a collector's item.
Wow!
And that's basically what's going on.
For those people who obviously can't see what we're seeing on our screens, Caleb was posted a link in the chat, and Pure Solar for the Sega Genesis. We're looking at the new price is $346. Amazon.
But then for the Mega Drive, I can understand why to a guy who, especially an RPG, a fan of RPGs and a Mega Drive, let's say they've rinsed the Mega Drive, the bigger RPGs and the Mega Drive, looking for something new.
It's
designed within the restrictions of the Mega Drive hardware, and the sound and everything is reminiscent of the Mega Drive.
There's a whole generation of people,
I totally
Ross,
get it.
There's a whole generation of people, Ross, who take a look at the Dreamcast and the Mega Drive, and they're the exact same category for those people. They don't consider anything about like what the systems were designed for. They just think those are both retro systems. They just put them in this exact same category, and thus things that come out, they'll put them in the same category, even though one was probably more directly in tune with that sort of game, and the other one is in tune with another sort of game. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
To get back on point.
I do want to be fair to Pure Solar. It didn't just look quite like a Mega Drive game. They had done extra things to it. It was higher resolution. I think they'd updated to sprites. It was essentially the HD version scaled down to 480p on the Dreamcast, at least.
And it had stuff like FMU mini games added to it and all this kind of stuff as well. They really put the work in.
And yeah, you can definitely tell it's a labor of love, despite all the problems they had and the time it took.
Guys, I want to get back on track to Zia. I know it's
Zia.
I mean, I'll be completely like open and transparent. I didn't pay for this game because Cedric or Orion sent me the copy for free to review. That doesn't mean that I was overly kind to it, though. There are a couple of things I didn't particularly like. The fact that there is no map is pretty crippling, because you're just constantly walking around in a circle. You've got no idea where you're going sometimes, and you're just like, I was wandering around for half an hour. I'm like, I have no idea where I'm meant to go next. I'm just like, oh, I can't bother with this. Turn it off. I'll come back to it later. Again, the graphics are quite basic. It does look... Sometimes it's very difficult to tell what is an enemy and what is part of the scenery, or what you can interact with and what you can't. And it does look very basic. But I think in some ways that's part of the charm. You know, certainly the interiors look really, really nice in a sort of a SNES type of way that I described earlier. Like I say, it's not a perfect game. But if you like RPGs and you're a completionist and you want to actually buy something not just to have in your collection but also to play, you can do far, far worse than getting a copy of this. I'm sure the price will come down in time as well, you know, when you know he realises that, shit, I've got a warehouse full of these games that no one's buying. I'll put the price down.
Well, how is the quality of... I get the impression by looking at the pictures, the quality of the CD and the case...
Oh, brilliant. That's brilliant. It's really good.
See, that's the thing. I would love if on all these Kickstarters and things like that, I'd love it if they had an option for, I don't know, scummy Dreamcast gamer, and it's just a disc
CDR
with a CDR with a cheap, very cheap print on
like
the top.
Copy attack.
It's just plain coloured glossy paper printed on his own and cut with scissors, and they lowered the price to something more reasonable, because $40 for something.
Well, that's
Steam
the whole thing
for
$5 that I said.
Is just too much.
That's similar to what I was saying when the whole Volgar the Viking thing came up. I said they should probably just have it hosted as a paid link, and you could just buy the CDI download, and then you could just burn the copy yourself and print out the cover and stuff yourself. And I always thought that would be like a really valid means of like, you know, selling just the digital version of the game, and you know,
But you see, Caleb, sorry. One last point about this. You see, Caleb, no one was interested in really. Like, there were a few, but
Volga the Viking came out and it just passed.
Yeah, on 360,
no one,
yeah.
No one on the groups talk about it. Sorry, on the 360, but also on the Dreamcast. I mean, to me, that's perhaps... Well, there are a few games I'd put in the top tier of indie Dreamcast games, unlicensed games. And that's definitely one of them, perhaps my favourite. But it just went... Like, no one reviewed it. Even us. I mean, even we didn't review it. No one reviewed it. No one paid any attention to it because it wasn't hyped up. There was no Kickstarter. There was no collector's edition and figurines and strategy guide, Dreamcast strategy guide, to have with it to put on your shelf and say, look what I've got, and put pictures on Facebook. And it just went almost, I'm not saying everyone, but it almost completely unnoticed.
Well, just to address that point, I did attempt to review it, but it's so fucking hard. I couldn't even get past the first level, so I didn't bother.
Right. I've got to about the third or fourth level, and I didn't play a huge amount, so I will go back to that, and I will give at least a... What do you call it?
A quick lookout, yes.
Which I stole from
Giant Bomb. So, yeah, thanks. Right, so that is Zia and the Goddesses of Magic. It's a solid RPG if you've got 40 euros to burn. I would recommend it, yeah, if you like that kind of thing. And, yeah, let's move on to the next thing we're going to talk about. This is actually related in some ways to what you were talking about just there towards the end there, Ross, about having, and also Caleb, about having different types of packaging. Retro Summers are back with Xenocider. Obviously, the Kickstarter failed a few months ago, and they are doing it their own way now. They're taking pre-orders for the game. The game is coming out, and it's going to have different tiers, if you want to call it that, of packaging. So you've got like the standard edition, you've got the special editions, you've got the PAL special edition. Not too sure why anybody would want that, because it's got those disgusting hinges on the case. Guys, what do you think about Xenocider making a triumphant return?
I think this is basically their way. The pre-orders is basically their way of crowdfunding it without using Kickstarter. I mean, obviously, it's cost them to make, especially the PAL cases, that are going to cost them a lot of money to recreate. So I guess this is just their way of making that money they couldn't
I would
on
hazard,
Kickstarter.
Almost better. They don't have to give 5% to Kickstarter.
I would hazard that they'll probably buy loads of old copies of Choo Choo Rocket off eBay and then use the cases from those. that's the most cost-effective way.
That's a good idea.
I sent this to Carlos on Facebook, you know.
Loads of UA for strikers.
Or at WWF Attitude. Yeah.
Oh yeah,
that's a disgraceful idea. We've got to preserve our games. You can't do things like that. Disgraceful.
Yeah, so I'm just looking at the Xenocider website now, and I'm going to get the definitive list of all the different flavors of the game up. It's worth noting as well that they released a new demo that's got the Space Harrier, like, homage level. It's got the new Swamp level in there as well. I have downloaded it, but I can't burn it again because, as I said earlier, I use a Mac. And I have to use my girlfriend's laptop to burn stuff, but that was her work laptop, which is now exchanged for one without a CD drive, so I'm kind of stuck on how to burn. Yeah, it makes a nightmare. I can got full integration with all my iOS and macOS devices, but can I burn a CD from my Dreamcast? Can I balls? Do you know what I mean? No, I can't. it does look really cool. We've got like these new enemies and, like I say, a new stage. Yeah, the new... new types of packaging. Bear with me a second, I'm just trying to find it. I know they've got a new store on their website, which I'm going to quickly go to. I'm just trying to fill the space now with some chatting about nonsense. Ah, here we go. Right, so...
Yeah, I really like what they're doing with the demos, like putting them out each time they've got like a new level to show. I think that's
for
been
everyone
really cool.
To download
and, like,
people, freely.
Yes. Yeah, burn them, yeah. I've really enjoyed that.
We've got the Xenocider regular edition, which looks like it comes in a standard jewel case with like US packaging. There's the Xenocider special edition, which comes, it looks like, with a music CD in a sort of a DVD style case. And then we've got the Steelbook and the PAL editions, which are both 100 euros, which is, I'm going to be honest, it's a bit too expensive for my tastes because I can't afford to spend that much money on a game. Any game, you know what
I mean?
Same here. It's a Dreamcast game.
I agree, but they've given you the option. If you just want to play the game,
they've given
you the option. If you're, I mean, a lot of these kick funding products, they make a very high percentage of their money, or these indie games, from the super anal collectors. And so, if you've got a complex that means you have to have the
PAL box of Xenocider. That's your issue. You don't have to buy it. If you want to play the game, you can just buy the regular version, which is what, $40?
$45.
So that's not entirely unreasonable. No. It's a bit expensive, but I mean, this is some good things about it. This is the first. Elysian Shadows, I believe, uses a 3D engine anyway, but it looks like this will be released first. So this should be the first indie developed Dreamcast game that uses this fully 3D polygonal game. I played the demo and I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was fantastic or excellent, but I thought it was good. I definitely enjoyed it.
Definitely still needs some polish, obviously.
And would I place it up there with Dreamcast quality graphics? No, probably not. It's maybe somewhere between the 32-bit and the Dreamcast generation. But that's about where it should be.
It's in my opinion. 64-bit.
Yes, that's basically what I'm saying.
It's very interesting, too, because I remember when I ordered Last Resort Pink Bullets Edition, I plopped down $60 for that, and that used to be the going price for games like that. And now this one is like $51 American, which is not, I mean, that's not a terrible price for, like, you know, a brand new game.
It's not great either, but it's terrible.
I'm not going to start crying over it, but it kind of makes me a little bit sad is that it's only now in 2016 and going forward that we're kind of getting to the point where indie games are using, like, you know, these advanced 3D engines. And it's going to get to the point where, you know, Dreamcasts, you know, they do fail. And, you know, in another 5 years' time, maybe the amount of Dreamcasts that are actually operational is probably going to be even less than it is now. And it's only now that the developers are actually getting to grips with the tools to make impressive looking 3D games. So by the time we get to a point where people can actually make, like the new one that's coming from, you know, the as yet unnamed shooter, the one with the guys with the clown faces on, which looks really impressive. You know, by the time stuff like that comes out and beyond, you know, people are going to have less and less working Dreamcasts, apart from, you know, people like me and us lot who have got, you know, ridiculous amounts of Dreamcasts clogging up their houses. So, yeah, it's not, like I say, it's not sad, cry sad, but it's something to think about, you know.
Well, Ross.
Sorry, carry on, Caleb. I was going to say, I think the first batch of indie Dreamcast games we got, they were riding off the success of the final games for Dreamcast, which in their own way were indie games themselves. They were licensed, but they're indie games. You know, stuff like Kadas, was it Radiruji?
Why are you doing a French accent?
Trigger Heart. Radiruji. That's how.
Do you mean radio allergy?
It's Radiruji.
That's how some people pronounce it. But if you look at the color, it's
Reminded me of when, like, football commentators tried to pronounce
but
like,
anyway,
foreign
names with,
like, an accent.
It's not the point.
You're from Devon, you're not from Tokyo.
Those themselves were indie games, really. They were licensed, but they were indie games, especially stuff like Trizeal. There was, I think, one guy basically made them himself. And so the Dreamcast became, even after its death, it was still the console of choice for shmup fans in many ways until the 360. So you could recommend a Dreamcast to people and be like, yeah, there's these great classic games, but if you're a shmups fan, there's also quite a few indie games still being made for it. I'm not sure if you can still do that now. And we used, you know, the Dreamcast indie scene used to be supported by not only hardcore Dreamcast nutters like ourselves, but also the hardcore shmup fans. And now the shmup fans have moved on now. They don't care. They don't have any loyalty to the Dreamcast. They just want to play shmups, and they'll play them on. They're playing them on Steam.
Yeah, they'll start to pop up on Steam.
Xenocider coming out soon, and there's different flavors of box that you can buy.
Also, I'm very happy to say that they have the T-shirt there too, which is really nice for somebody who still wants to support them, might not have the $60, but, you know, for $22 for a T-shirt, that's not too bad.
Yeah, I've got a copy of the T-shirt. I've got a T-shirt.
Are you going to do a review of your copy of the T-shirt?
I might do. I might do, yes.
Yeah.
Has anyone here ordered Xenosaga?
I haven't, I must admit. Not yet. No. I know not loads yet. Of people in the Facebook group have, so yeah.
Me neither. Sorry, I will Carlos. Buy it, but yeah, I've set a rule for myself that I've been a big I wait until games recently. Are released, and then once they're released, if it looks good and the word on the forums and reviews are positive, then I'll buy it.
That's kind of my position with it as well, and all the demos are helping. If they keep making more demos, I think that will help gauge my interest as well.
Just one final closing point on this topic. I did ask for some questions on the Facebook group for this episode, which we may come to at the end of this episode. At the end of the episode, sorry, Carlos, who is actually the lead developer of Xenosaga, asked, "Did you guys think the PAL edition for Xenosaga is too expensive, and do you know why it is?" Yes, we do. Yeah, because you get the next like bits and bobs with it. And do you like the new demo? Obviously, yes. It's very cool. And yeah, we do think it's too expensive. So sort that out, Carlos. No,
no. I say rinse those obsessive compulsive collectors dry, Carlos.
Anybody? Why not? Because all I hear is collectors that changing over their UK cases to like slim cases and stuff like that.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Does anybody actually like the big chunky?
Oh, I don't know. Who would do such a thing?
I mean, most of my collection is PAL, so I mean, they're just kind of like second nature to me to seeing them.
I replaced most of mine with American and Japanese games now.
I hate the PAL
games left.
I mean, I don't
know. Yeah, same. Well, you know, Dynamite Dreams did the same thing. They had a tier for a more expensive PAL edition of their game as well.
All right, which one's that? Dynamite Dreams?
Yeah. That's the Bomberman-esque.
I think it costs around £80 to get the PAL version, so they've done the
Dynamite Dreams. Is that not Alice Dreams Tournament?
Or Alice Dreams Dynamite.
Alice Proper Old School, that's what it was originally called.
Dynamite Dreams must have been school name. Actually,
on that topic, topic, I know I'm going off the scripture here, but on the topic of Alice Dreams, I did speak to the guys from Alice Dreams to ask if we could get a demo for Play Manchester, which is coming up in a few weeks, or next week even. And they said, yeah. Message us, you know, close to the time, we'll send you a demo. Message them, didn't hear anything. So they're probably not listening to this, but if you are, I did try. I tried to get a demo for the biggest retro gaming event in the UK to show the game off, and you just didn't answer.
Did you do the thing where you went into Google Translate and you translated it into French as well as English, and you just put that in there as well?
No, because if I did that, it would probably sound like I was saying absolute gobbledygook. I tried to contact you know, Pierre Santino, the Dreamcast barber. I sent him a message doing that to ask if he could record a little voiceover thing saying, well, you know, you're listening to the Dreamcast Junkyard.
Oh,
and when I sent it to him, he replied with like a question mark. And so I got the French text, put it back through Google, and it just sounded like absolute nonsense. So I don't think that really worked. So no, but yeah, we'll leave that one there.
You have to be very, very, if you're using Google Translate like that, you have to be very careful. Make like one short sentence very clear. Always use pronouns, and then leave a space and do another sentence. Nothing complicated. Just really clear.
Here's a fun game for the best Google Translate. Right, type something in English. Yeah, translate it to like French, and then copy and paste the French into the box, then translate into that Russian, and then do it about 5 times into different languages, and then back into English again. And it makes no sense at all. It's actually quite fun. So yeah, I've obviously got far too much free time on my hands.
Well, I see. As a English teacher, I know straight away one of my students' work has just been put straight through Google Translate.
Oh, from Japanese into English. Yeah.
Well,
I forgot about that.
I mark them.
Not these kids.
I mark them like correctly, and I'm kind. But then at the bottom in small red, I'll write Google Translate ? Just leave it at that.
Well, frankly, I learned all my French in Montreal. So, tenez un
salut. Yeah, we'll have no more of that. Yeah, Caleb, thanks.
Something about tennis?
Right, let's move on. Speaking of people with far too much time on their hands, Ross O'Reilly's been doing some some investigative journalism, inverted air quotes. Let's move on.
No, no, wait a minute. I heard this. I don't know. You just stand away from the mic, Caleb. I need to ask him a question. It seems like there's been some numbers that don't make any sense. And it seems like there's a situation where there might be some sort of conspiracy. Now, Ross, can you tell us more about this?
Before you go on any further, Ross, please introduce the game first. Okay, so basically what we're talking about is a game...
Jesse. Jesse is Jesse, isn't it? I don't want to get your name wrong.
Yeah, you can call me the former governor.
Okay, Jesse, I don't mean to be rude, Jesse. I'll get back to your question.
We will get back to the question shortly. Basically, what this is about is there's a game for the TurboGrafx/PC engine called Henshin Engine, which is a game based on a webcomic, and it follows the exploits of a manga-ish or cartoon anime-style protagonist. And she goes to work for a video game company, ends up being sucked into the video game, and then must battle against, you know, evil competitor video game type people. I personally thought that the art style looked really cool, and I was aware of it, and then suddenly had a Dreamcast stretch goal on Kickstarter, which initially kind of didn't rub me up the wrong way, but I kind of thought, that's a bit fishy. I mean, they're already going to meet their target for the PC Engine version. They've now just added a Dreamcast version, and it looks to me like they've just done that because they want to get a bit more publicity, maybe. In hindsight, maybe it looks like it was actually asked for by the fan base, and, you know, I'm not going to make any accusations about where that came from. And, so this is Henshin Engine. It's a 2D platform game in the style of things like Mega Man. Ninja Gaiden is another game that they've touted as being an inspiration for it. We were all set to do an interview and talk about the Kickstarter and everything like that. And then Ross decided to go on an Erin Brockovich mental rampage.
Oh, come on. Don't throw me under the bus like that, mate. That was passed around everyone on the team. Everyone looked at it in a first and agreed that it was worth publishing.
Before we get to that, basically what's happened is... we were going to run an interview with the guys from Henshin Engine. I was just waiting for a reply, really. And then Ross published his findings of looking deeper into the numbers behind the game, behind the Kickstarter, that kind of thing. Ross, do you want to take over and just tell us a little bit about what happened and what you did, basically, what you looked into?
First of all, my first impression when I saw this game for Dreamcast was, why? Again, this is another game. It looks like an 8-bit PC Engine game because it's designed to run within the restrictions of PC Engine hardware. If you're nostalgic for that time, then great. I can understand why you'd want that for PC Engine. But what does this have to do with the Dreamcast? Why does it exist? I can't understand. If people want to spend their money on it, that's fine, but I can't understand why you'd want... You know, I have no desire to play Bonk's Adventure on the Dreamcast.
There was going to be the choice of either a Mega CD or Sega CD or a Dreamcast version, and that's what the next stretch goal was going to be. But when people's overwhelming support came for the Dreamcast version, I think that's when it was decided to go as a Dreamcast stretch goal. But anyway, sorry, carry on, Ross.
You know, like, I think all things like this, when, you know, anytime I see a Kickstarter for Dreamcast in the past, instantly... I do have a feeling like I want to support this project because it's a new Dreamcast game. But then if I take a step back and think, really, would I be interested in this game if it wasn't for the Dreamcast? If this was just a game on Steam or PC Engine, would I have any interest in this? And I thought no. But anyway, I was still kind of interested.
I think just on that point, Ross, sorry to butt in, there was also another game which we just completely ignored because it just didn't look very good, and that was Shadow Gangs, which is another game that hit Kickstarter, and it looked like it had been made in Microsoft Paint. So we just kind of, not ignore it, but,
Let's be honest, looking at... I backed Saber Rider, and back then... All Saber Rider had was the rights to this old cartoon that I don't know about you guys, but I'd never heard of it personally.
Nope.
Nah, me neither.
But this was a time when
me, myself included, we'd just jump on anything that was Dreamcast, or at least I did at the time. And then they've also released some screenshots recently. The game got a $90,000 in funding, and I look at it and I just think, wow, what was I thinking? Why did I throw my money at a project of people who I know nothing about, have never, as far as I know, to my knowledge, have never developed a Dreamcast game before, never developed any game, I don't know, as far as I know, they had no prototype of the game, no screenshots, no nothing. And I think recently, within the last, especially last 6 months, especially, but maybe last year, the Dreamcast community is starting to get fed up with all the promises, all the disappointing Kickstarter
games. Yeah, you've got a good
games.
Point there. I mean, I know it's been... I think there's a general kind of malaise in general throughout the community where it's like, yeah, this game's coming to Kickstarter, and everyone kind of goes, yay, and then everyone kind of goes, another one, what are you never going to see? You know, and no disrespect to people who have got Kickstarters, you know, running or they've been funded. I can't make a game. I'll be honest. I don't have a clue how you would even go about starting to make a game. So I'm not going to sit here and go, oh, that shit or whatever. But I just think, you know, there's been that many promises in the Kickstarter sort of field when it comes to the Dreamcast. It's like everyone's just kind of a bit burnt out with it now, you know. But anyway, carry on.
Is that okay if I jump in?
Yeah,
I just want to say, like, it's kind of become a thing with Kickstarter in general.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Not even just Dreamcast Kickstarters, but just game Kickstarters in general. I mean, have a look at, for example, the Homestuck Kickstarter,
where they said
they were going to make a game. Got millions and millions of dollars. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. You know, all them promises. They said, oh, we're going to get a big company in and all this kind of stuff. Gone. Just absolutely vanished. No one's seen any trace of it in years. So, you know, even when it's like a trusted brand,
I mean,
or it's some kind of, you know, there's loads of
the thing is, like, creative people aren't businessmen, and there's been like such weird things, like the Kickstarter for the Goblins webcomic thing, where he wanted to do a board game and stuff. I mean, oh my god, that was a terrible story where this other dude just basically just completely screwed this guy over, and the actual creator guy like wanted to make sure everybody got like more than their money's worth and all this other stuff, and everybody just got ended up completely screwed because this random dude who was just a con artist basically managed to get in there and do some fast talking. And the dude who was in charge of the webcomic is the best guy ever, and he basically, there's nothing he could do because he just didn't know a lot about business and stuff like this, and he just assumed this is how it happened. And like the whole Kickstarter as a whole, I got screwed over by a miniature Kickstarter where like the people were like, I mean, they presented this thing where like they were naming names and stuff, but then you realize it's like the names that they named, those are people that are names in the industry of miniatures, but they just basically were contracted out to do this tiny part of the project. And in the end, like, even though their name's on the project and they did the work, none of the actual miniatures got produced. And like then this person went on to do more Kickstarter projects. And it's just like it's the same dude who did this completely failed one. And for whatever reason, Kickstarter doesn't have their crap together. And this dude can just keep on doing more and more projects. And until the actual community says, hey, this one dude, don't. Even though he's got all the names and everything looks good, and if you do the research, it seems like a legit thing. This is not a legit thing. And there's just, that's Kickstarters all over the place, not just for gaming, for pretty much everything. It's terrible.
Yeah.
No, I agree. And if you look at the best indie games. I'm not sure if you guys would agree with me, but I think you will. So the best Dreamcast indie games, maybe Leona's Tricky Adventure, Wind and Water Battles, that was Red Spot Games, along with Rush Rush Rally Racing. Awesome. I haven't played that, but I've heard great things about it. Yeah. Then you've got the Neo Geo Dev Team games, particularly Fast Striker and Gunlord. To my knowledge, none of these games were kickstarted. Am I right? They were all...
I think Leona's Tricky Adventure started as an Indiegogo and that failed, but then they did what Xenosiders do now. They did a pre-order thing.
Right.
So it basically went the same way as Xenosider. Yeah.
None of these games were done by Kickstarter, and they turned out great. And I think if you, I mean, we're talking now about these these latest couple Kickstarters for Dreamcast games, their goal is around $20,000-$25,000. The team is about 4 or 5 people. Now, to me, there's no reason why a group of 4 to 5 men can't find between themselves $25,000 if they're that passionate about a project. They can get loans, they can put loans, they can use some of their assets as leverage against the loan. They can help. They, you know, $5,000 between each other. Just save up some money for half a year. There's no reason. I don't see that you can't.
You don't really have any way to confirm that they haven't already tried that loan. They haven't already put some money into it. I mean, especially these games
since the beginning of time.
Yeah, well, here's the thing, though. I just watched the documentary on the Dwarven Forge miniature stuff. And like what that guy did is he did what Ross said. He went to the bank and they made fun of him for making a company that was labeled Dwarven Forge. And he got a loan and he created like a business first. And he created like a successful little business first and then went on to use Kickstarter to expand that business. But he already did the thing that Ross did, where he risked his own money and such to put out a quality project that then people bought and were happy with.
And I think if you use your own money, then there's a responsibility there on you. Like if you screw up or if it's getting delayed at some point, there's a limit to how much money you can spend, how much time you can take, and you've got to do it a good job. Whereas people are only going to buy it if the end product towards release, if the reviews, previews, videos, whatever, make it look like a good game. Otherwise, they're not going to touch it. Whereas when you go the Kickstarter route, you're giving up all your money on blind faith to some randoms, and there's no responsibility
like
there.
Like number nine.
Like nine to number, I mean, okay, I don't know if I should use this example, but Elysian Shadows looks like a fantastic game, and Falco, you can tell he's really passionate, he's really dedicated, he's charismatic, he's witty, he's an intelligent guy,
hey,
putting a lot of energy into his project. But I think because like he was literally straight out of university and $200,000, no experience in, as far as I know, not a lot of experience or any experience in business, and people just chucked $200,000 at him. And if you look at the Kickstarter, there's like so many of these stretch goals with all these various things, strategy guides, limited edition this, limited edition that. Even when he finally finishes the game, and I believe it's going to be a really good game when it finally gets released, it's going to take him another half a year, to get all of these different limited edition things produced and like find contracts of people to make them, etc., etc.
It's going to eat time from the actual game development. Yeah.
Like Caleb said earlier, like just because you're creative, that doesn't mean that you're a good businessman and if for example, and I don't mean this as criticism, but if these people were working for a company that have set deadlines, if you know you've got to get done by this date, if you don't get it done, there's going to be consequences for that. Whereas when it's just a Kickstarter, what consequences are there?
Ross, I think we're getting kind of a little bit off topic. This section was to discuss, you know, what's just recently gone down with the Henshin Engine and your investigation into like things like, you know, like buying and that kind of stuff. So did you want to just basically go through that and explain to people maybe who maybe not seen it what the problem is?
Yeah, so I took a... It's all there on the Dreamcast Junkers website. I took a close look at the site. As we mentioned earlier, the way that they were encouraging Dreamcast fans to back the project well before the stretch goal had been met meant that if they hadn't made the stretch goal, then those Dreamcast fans would have their money withdrawn from their account and they would have been forced to accept PC or PC Engine game. So that was the first thing that set alarm bells. I didn't think that was a bit disingenuous. So I looked a bit further into it. There's a couple of websites you can use that analyze your Facebook pages. So I looked at the Henshin Engine page and it currently has 8,000 likes. The lead of the project has his own page called Sarumaru and that has 35,000 likes. To put this into perspective, 8,000 likes is more likes than Elysium Shadows, Red Spot Games, Hughcast, Retro Samus, pretty much every indie game, Dreamcast game you can think of added together does not reach that 8,000 likes target. And these are people like Falco, who's got a super successful YouTube channel with 12,000 subscribers. He's been going since 2008. It just didn't make sense to me. So I ran it through this program, and it turned out that 87% of their 8,000 likes were from the Philippines, which straight away doesn't sound right. If you look at any other Dreamcast Kickstarter or video game Kickstarter in general and look at their page, every single one of them, the highest proportion of followers and likes is from the USA. Countries like the UK, Canada are usually
What's to say that they just don't have like a massive following in the Philippines?
It's perfectly possible, but you know, this is so Henshin Engine was originally a comic, a web comic. It ran for just 2 episodes, 39 pages total, and was the last episode released in July. It's set in the PC Engine universe, and now they're making this PC Engine and Dreamcast game. Now, the PC Engine, so the focus of this project is a PC Engine with Dreamcast video games. The PC Engine and Dreamcast have never, ever been officially released in Philippines. There's no Dreamcast or PC Engine following in the Philippines. It doesn't exist. It really doesn't exist.
I don't know what else to tell you. Like a huge, like all those other ones, like Retro Sumus and all those, they would have like larger percentages of people coming in from the Philippines to look at their, to like their stuff.
So after putting this in the article, publishing it, they came back and said it was because of the way they were advertising the page.
A good point, actually, I use this analyzer to analyze the likes from Retro Collect. And as Retro Collect is basically just a big retro gaming, you know, it covers everything.
How many likes for Retro Collect?
12,500. And
12,500, okay. So not too far off.
There's not many from the Philippines. So I would have thought if they were genuine likes from the Philippines, then there would be at least 8.
How many of those likes from the Philippines?
Top of my head, I don't know. Because
if you go down the table...
It wasn't even in the top 20 of countries. So,
no. And of course, it wouldn't be. Anyone with any common sense could tell you that shouldn't be the case. There's something strange going on there. You know, there's no other explanation for that. So after publishing the website, they saw the post and they commented, and their defense was that it was the way their... the same with Sarumaru's page. Sarumaru is a guy, from what I can tell, he's been involved with the two issues of the comics that ran for only 2 issues, 39 pages total. He created a character for a one video game event, not E3 or something, a smaller retro video game event, and he did the artwork for one web-based game that no one's ever heard of. And he has almost 30,000 likes. This is ridiculous. GameSack only have 10,000 likes. RetroClick, like you say, only have 12,000 likes. Ukulele has only 12,000 likes. So this is a ridiculous number for someone with such a small portfolio that's never had a big hit. And hit on his page, this is not an exact quote because I don't have the figures in front of me, but I think over half or around half of his people he's got likes from are from Mexico, and another quarter or more are from the Philippines, and then there's also Kuwait and El Salvador, Puerto Rico, all of these developing countries where these numbers are unusually high.
Let's cut to the chase. What are you saying?
I've already said there's various ways you could manipulate these likes or get these likes. You can pay. And that was, I didn't want to straight out accuse them of anything, but that was my original thought, that they'd paid for likes to one of these third-party companies that use people in developed countries where the economy isn't as great and pay them basically to like hundreds of pages each day. So that was my original thought. Now, after publishing the article, they got back to us and they said, and they showed us evidence of it, they said it was because of the way they advertise on Facebook. So they pay $30 a month, from what I can tell, on both of those pages, Sarumaru and Henshin Engine, $1 a day. And they've been doing that since the creation of both pages. So that's since February on Henshin Engine. And I think this is the case for Sarumaru. I think since about 2013, they've been doing the same. Paying.
And that's not illegal, now, though, is it? I mean, because I admit, occasionally,
none of this is illegal. I've never said anything.
Oh, okay,
about
illegality. No, but what I'm saying is, I've used boosting on Facebook to like boost the Dreamcast Junkyard occasionally. Do you know what I mean? So. I mean, it does happen. I've done it myself, you know. Mm. It's not really been very successful because I've only done it like a pound here or a pound there because I'm cheap, you know what I mean? I can't afford it. Go ahead.
Did you, and when you chose to boost for pages or when you chose to pay for the advertisements, did you choose to advertise it in third world countries where there is no Dreamcast or video game?
I generally choose to. No, it'd be like USA, UK, France, Germany, European countries.
$30 a month, again, like that's a lot of money to be, you know, just to jack up like pure numbers and nothing else. Like you're not,
right. On two accounts, that's $60 a month. And these people are now asking the community for money. I just didn't think it's right. And it still doesn't really make all that much sense because even if they are through ads, which seems to be the case, 87% of these, so 8,000 likes from a group. If you look on the group, and 35,000 likes on the other group, if you look, especially on the Sarumaru page, if you look on there, and I've looked at the statistics, they get an average of 4 likes, comments, or shares per post. And that is ridiculously low for a page that has 30,000 followers or likes. There's no way to explain that. If you look at Ukulele, that has 12,000 likes, followers, whatever, they get over 1,000 interactions on almost, or between 500 and 1,500, maybe even 2,000 for every single post. This page gets maybe 4, sometimes less, maybe 7 or 8 maximum. This is a Sarumaru. The Henshin Engine does get slightly more, especially recently in the last month or so when they've been doing the Kickstarter. But before then, it's bare, and there's no, even if it was through advertisement, there's no.
So Ross, can I just ask something?
It's clear that the motivation, at least it seems, the motivation for advertising to these countries was purely to get likes, because I don't think there's many people in the Philippines and El Salvador and Kuwait and Mexico supporting the Kickstarter. So
yeah, that's my main point too. There might be people in that group that are fans of retro games that might click like, but you're right, there's not that many people. I would assume that you're the bulk of your Kickstarter backers are not going to come from that country, obviously.
Guys, I just want to make this point. I just want to
their defense was that he wasn't trying to promote the Henshin Engine game. He was paying for the adverts on both pages purely to promote the comic, the free web comic he did, because there's anime fans in Philippines, which makes no sense to me. You're doing a Kickstarter. Why would you spend $30 on two pages a month to promote a free web comic that you can't make any money off that had its last issue in July.
My point is, Ross, is this, to play devil's advocate, right? So just to say that hypothetically, yes, they are buying likes. The question remains, so what? I mean, what do they gain from having likes from like bots and having all these figures on their pages? What are you actually getting at? What do you think is...
Again, I'm not directly accusing them, saying they are definitely 100% doing this, because I wouldn't like to say that when I don't have
100%. But what I'm saying is, what do they stand to gain from doing that?
I would say it builds
credibility. It gives you
appearance. And also when Facebook does their algorithm and stuff, like, they might potentially be pushed a little bit more than other other Kickstarters or other Dreamcast games that, you know.
Okay, I mean, I will again once.
Well, I'm not sure about that.
Say, once again, in the name of transparency, I have spoken to the guys from Henshin Engine, and you know, they are the article that you've published has, you know, affected them, and they've come out and said, "Wow, we know, fuck all we tried to do was make a game." I did kind of feel a bit like shitty, you know what I mean? Because essentially, all we're doing is supporting the Dreamcast, but on the other side of it. And I totally see where you're going from, Ross. It's like, wait a minute, are you actually trying to support the Dreamcast, or are you doing this to line your pockets? Do you know what I mean? Am I getting the right end of the stick with my kind of summation there?
Well, there could be those motivations. There could be other motivations, wanting to be in the spotlight, wanting attention. I mean, that's the kind of person who would boost. I'm not saying they are, but a kind of person who would try to artificially boost the appearance of the success of their site is that kind of person.
So just to wrap up,
perhaps it's to get more money. Another thing, sorry, this team have never ever as much as ran a test program on a Dreamcast. They've never done any development.
But this wouldn't be the first Kickstarter to have done that.
It wouldn't be.
A couple months ago, there was a Wisdom Tree Kickstarter, and they actually had a stretch goal for a Dreamcast Noah's Ark 3D of all things.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they've obviously never touched the Dreamcast either, but like, I guess they weren't pushing the Dreamcast angle of it quite as hard, but you know.
I don't know if that's a good defense though, like, oh, these people are also doing it.
I'm not checking my money for either of them. People might be getting a bit bored of it, but if you just wanted to wrap up, Ross, and tell us what the...
Yeah, I'm kind of falling asleep.
Just kind of like, you know, say what your kind of points were, like, if you can just wrap it up a bit.
Yeah, points were, there's obviously some kind of... there's obviously been some kind of effort put into getting likes to boost the appearance of their page. The game is not a Dreamcast game. They've never, ever developed any Dreamcast games. They have nothing to do with Dreamcast. The goal for their original project was $18,000. They're asking for $24,000 to get a Dreamcast version. That's only an extra $6,000 for them to spend the time to put this on Dreamcast. I wonder... if they can really do it, maybe they can. I wonder, is it just going to be the PC Engine version running on an emulator on the Dreamcast? Who knows? Another point was that there, if you look on YouTube and type in Henshin Engine, the most viewed video was Happy Console Gamers bit about the game, and people in the team, Sarumaru, also happens to be a Patreon of Happy Console Gamer, so he's paying Happy Console Gamer how much, I don't know, but it's still kind of disingenuous that none of this was mentioned. That Happy Console Gamer himself didn't say these are some of my patrons. He didn't mention that fact. So you'd think you'd want to be transparent in that kind of situation.
Again, just going back from the other side, I keep using this phrase over and over again, devil's advocate, but that's what I am essentially in this story. We are good friends with Duranic, Iwanworks, and Carlos from Retro Summers, and Ryan, and all these other indie devs. And we give, exposure to their projects and games whenever there is a new development or a Kickstarter update or whatever it might be. So technically, I mean, we could be accused of doing the same thing for them.
But they don't know that.
No, they don't.
I don't. Okay.
I think we should kind of draw this section to a close just because it's dragging on a bit, as Erin says. That's the story. If you want to get any more information about Ross's article, it is up on the Dreamcast Junkyard, the main blog, now, today. I'm probably not going to edit this out of this podcast because I think it's gone quite well. I think we can just basically upload it as is without editing out any kind of fuck-ups or people answering phone calls.
Really?
It will be up probably later on today, so this is quite current, what we're talking about. I want to draw this section to a close, and
Yeah, I would say finally, just don't listen to me. Don't listen to anyone. Don't even read the article if you don't want to. But I would advise anyone: don't just rush in and throw your money at people that you know nothing about. Look
into, look at who these people are, what they've done before.
Basically, make treat an informed it like every decision. Other Kickstarter.
treat it like you would giving a loan to someone. You know,
okay.
Think, make an informed decision and decide for yourself.
Yeah, don't listen to them.
And again, when talking about Kickstarter stuff, you know, obviously I never got my money back from that miniature Kickstarter where a lot of people put money into it and we just never got anything. Kickstarter is 99% probably not going to help you get your money back in general. So,
okay, let's move on. We're going to come to the final part of the podcast now, and this is where we ask for questions from the Facebook group. If you're not a member of the Facebook group, go on there. It's facebook.com/groups/ the Dreamcast Junkyard, or just type Dreamcast into the search box and you will find us. Okay, got a couple of questions here. I'm just going to fire these at you guys. So whatever first comes to mind, jump in. We've got one from, let's have a look. Sorry, I should have actually looked through these before going into this section, but I didn't. There's one here about Henshin Engine. I think we've heard enough about that for this particular episode. I don't want to talk about that anymore. Lewis Cox says, what is the most underrepresented genre on the Dreamcast? I would probably say it's RPGs, or maybe real-time strategy games. There's not many, is there? There's only one, I think, which is Conflict Zone. Oh, there's Panzer Front.
100 Swords.
There's a few Japanese ones.
Yeah, I think, probably real-time strategy is not massively represented.
There's not a whole lot of platformers either. There's a couple, like, key ones, but there ain't, like, 100.
There's only, we did, the last episode we did was the platform episode, so we did talk about the main ones on that.
I think we probably
covered them all, to be honest.
I don't think there's that many shumps on the Dreamcast.
Rhythm
games in Japan there's quite a few, but in the UK
just classic adventure.
I can remember
adventure slash puzzle games. You know,
Kev Wolves Mason says, if you could go back in time and slap a younger version of yourself in the face and tell them not to buy a certain game, what would that game be? And would you tell them to buy anything else in its place? My one for this would be Dragon's Blood or Draconis Cult of the Worm. Because I went into the shop, I saw it on the shelf. It was full price, like $39.99. And I bought it, even though there was like other games, like secondhand for cheaper than that. And I only bought it because I didn't know what it was. And there were no reviews out at the time because it was like mid-month, I think, when it must have appeared on the shelves. Bought Dragon's Blood. Took it home, put it in my Dreamcast, and I was just like, what have I done? What have I bought here? This is shit. So that's probably mine. Anyone else?
Well, frankly, as a young person, all the games that I got as a young 20-year-old were great. However, there was one that I bought for some ridiculous price because this was at the beginning of my collecting career, and I had never seen it before. Industrial Spy, Operation Espionage.
Oh, wow.
And I saw that in a store, and it was like... it was a lot of money. This is back in the day when you could get most games $5 or less. And that's how I was building my collection. And I ended up spending a ridiculous amount of money for this game. And the guy probably would have sold it to me for less. And it was just too much money. And I wish I had just, you know, saved my money and bought something better.
That's a game I've never played.
I must admit, I got that game really cheap.
Is it called I Spy? Is it I Spy?
Yeah, it is.
Full name I thought was Industrial Spy, Operation Espionage, but maybe I am incorrect.
Yeah, it's something spy anyway.
Something like that.
Okay, cool. What about you, Ross? Did you buy anything that you wish you hadn't?
God, I hate to sound like a bastard, but probably Ghostblade or Ducks.
Yeah. I was waiting for that.
Well, come on, Aaron. Come on, Aaron. What's yours?
I actually can't think of one off the top of my head right now.
Think of one. Now, go.
Okay. Redux. Going back to Kickstarters. Redux. The fact that it was just the exact same game but with worse graphics was the biggest disappointment of it. Was the fact that it was the same game as Dux. It was the biggest problem I had with it, and especially after like 2 years.
Okay,
like,
I'm only going to choose two more. Next one I'm going to take from Paul Monaghan, who is one of my co-presenters on the Maximum Power Up podcast. Go and listen to that if you're into your podcasts. You must be listening to this. Paul says, can you mention the top three starter Dreamcast games that are okay prices. So basically, if you buy a new Dreamcast or a second-hand Dreamcast, obviously, and you want three games, which ones, which are not ridiculously priced, would you go for? I would say, off the top of my head, Soul Calibur, Crazy Taxi, and let me think, a quick one off the top of my head, probably Rush 2049.
That's not really that cheap anymore.
I'll take that one and go for Speed Devils. It's got more kind of longevity to it and like variety. Yeah. What about you, Aaron? What would you, your top three be?
Yeah, probably Soul Calibur. Yeah, pretty much the same ones. Crazy Taxi, maybe something like Jet Set Radio or Sonic Adventure.
Anyone else for any more?
Yeah, I'd definitely go for Soul Calibur. Perhaps Crazy Taxi and Sonic Adventure. I know that sounds boring, but they're all dirt cheap and fantastic games.
Well, how about Choo Choo Rocket? Yeah. That's about as cheap as you can get at least here.
Or just buy this. Just buy Dream. Was it Dream On? Not Dream On. What's it called? Dream Arena. Dream Key. Dream Key. That's my choice. That's free.
Yeah. That's a fun one.
Sega Swirl.
Yeah. I actually got a free copy of that from Sega, in 2005 that. You know, Dream Key 3.0, nice. Whatever it was. I phoned them up and eventually got it.
Sega Swirl.
Just Sega Swirl. That's all you need.
Yep.
Okay, right.
That's it.
Last question. We're going to end this one on a high note. So Mac Finley from the group says, considering your recent playthrough of Zero and the Goddesses of Magic, what is your favourite indie title currently available or recently released for the Dreamcast? I'm going to go for favourite indie title recently would probably be Wind and Water Puzzle Battles.
I'd go for either Gunlord or Volga the Viking. Valga, Volga, how do you pronounce
like you're
it? Volga.
Falga.
Valga. Volga. Viking.
Caleb, what about
Volga
you?
The Viking.
Hatchet Ninjas, Beats of Rage.
Oh, good choice. Excellent.
No. I'm kidding. That's fun, but whoever programmed that game should have probably had a dictionary nearby. There's a lot of misspellings. No, I would have to say the one that I had the most fun of recently. Oh God. See, it's a toss up kind of between a couple different ones. Oh God. I would have to say Volgar too, honestly. Uh-huh. It's just like that's the one that I had the most fun with.
All right, then. Volgar and Wind and Water Puzzle Battles. Check those out, people, if you get the chance. Right. We've waffled on for long enough. We've waffled on about Kickstarter for long enough. This has been quite an indie game heavy episode, hasn't it, really? What I want to do at this point is just give a massive shout out and a thanks to our Patreon supporters, not just because they give us, you know, a donation every month, but also because they've had to put up with having no new episode for a month. And I was expecting a lot of them to kind of withdraw their support, and luckily they haven't. So that's really cool. And so thank you to you guys. Yeah, I just want to read out the names. We've got Adam Lundgren, Daniel Turner, and Spencer Johnson, who appeared on our Fight In podcast. We've got Tristan Berg-Brown, Alexander Padilla, one of my colleagues from Retro Collect there. Thank you to you. We've got Dave Baldwin, Chris Unwin, Ben Lancaster, Matthew Smith, Nat Danger, Samuel John Gottstall. If I pronounce anyone's name wrong here, by the way, send me a message. I always do it. I'm shit at names. Ben Warwick, James Steele, DCGX, Jason, I think I've got, is it Cavers? Cavers. Alex Hirsch, Brandon Aaron, Dan Payton, a guy called Membership, with threes instead of E's and a one instead of an I, Joe Simkowitz, Garrett Otto, John Thompson, and Future Hog. Thank you to all of you lovely people for donating your hard-earned cash to us. It's very much appreciated. I think that'll do it for this episode. We obviously are Dreamcast Junkyard Dream Pod. We can be found on Twitter at the DC Junkyard and on Facebook at facebook.com/TheDreamcastJunkyard, and our group is on there as well. And of course, we've got our blog, which is www.thedreamcastjunkyard.co.uk. This next week, we will be at Play Expo Manchester, which, as I mentioned earlier in the podcast, is a massive gaming event in the northern powerhouse that is Manchester, my hometown, not the one that Caleb currently lives in. Thousands and thousands of people going in, dressed up, cosplay, nerding out, playing retro games, playing current gen games, playing pinball machines, arcade machines. There's loads of stuff to buy because there's loads of traders. We will be there. We'll have about 8 Dreamcasts. Loads of stuff going on. Got loads of displays and, you know, new games, indie games, all that kind of stuff. We are going to be in the community zone. So come and find us if you want to just chat with us or give one of us a punch for something we've said on the podcast or whatever. Right, guys, you can all be found individually on Twitter. Aaron, you can be found where?
I could be found at The Gagaman.
Excellent. And also on YouTube, Lucky Hit Series. Caleb, you are on Twitter and Facebook, and Twitter and YouTube. Where can you be found?
My YouTube is on Blandco. Not doing a lot of video game stuff, doing a lot of miniature reviews. So if anybody happens to be interested in pre-painted miniatures or where to get cheap miniatures for board games, check that out, because I'm going to be doing another video series soon. Also, I want to apologize. The Bloop Kickstarter, which I was tangentially involved with, was not a success. Even though technically we took your money, the game did not come out. I would like to note that we are having an Indiegogo for Bloop, which is the light gun game from 2003, which was the homebrew game. I'm re-releasing it right now on Indiegogo. I'm trying to get the original UK cases.
Have you paid for likes?
I'm just saying, like, there's a lot of people from Indonesia that are real fans of Bloop, and you shouldn't really judge just because, you know, a lot of people from, you know, Uzbekistan, you know, just because the majority of my likes come from there, that doesn't really, you know, there's just a lot of people that are really into Bloop in that area. In any case, so please check that out. And again, you can directly deposit money into my account, which may or may not go to
the excellent. Thank okay, you. Ross, you can be found on the right. Facebook page, Making a Stink.
That's about it.
Is that right? Yeah, excellent. And I can be found on Twitter at Tom Lee C. And if you want to speak to me, then feel free. If you don't, fuck off. No, I'm joking. Right. Thanks for listening, everybody. This has been episode 39 of the Dreamcast Jumpcast Pod. I'm not going to edit this one. I'm not going to edit it. I'm just going to put it up as it is.
Yeah.
I haven't got 5 hours to spend editing this podcast. Really? I'm going to put it up as it is. It's an hour and a half long. People will love it. It's going to be great. Actually, this is going to be like a bit of a social experiment. If you listen to this podcast all the way to the end and you're hearing this bit now and you think it sounds like shit, let us know in the comments, because then I will edit the next one properly. But if it sounds all right and you like the style, the format, just off the cuff, then warts and all, I'll just keep it as it is. And when we record the podcast, they can go up the same day, because I won't have to mess about editing it in Audacity and having my MacBook crash on me constantly. So yeah, excellent.
Bye-bye.
Right, thanks very much for listening. Everybody say goodbye. Bye.
Goodbye.
Hello. Hey, it's time to make some crazy money. Are you ready? Here we go.
Please stop this disc now.